Hey, Mike.
Hi, Caleb. How are you?
I'm doing well. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I was in New Hampshire for the weekend, which is a long way to go for a weekend trip, but it was Mother's Day and there was a family birthday. And what was interesting is while I was there, I was also just, you know, kind of looking for Teslas. I wasn't out on the roads too much. And I noticed two things. One, I didn't see any Teslas.
None?
No, not a one. And two, people in New Hampshire on motorcycles do not wear helmets, which still just weirds me out. So yeah, that's the update. And then I arrived back at SFO and I walked from my plane to the exit and immediately there was a Tesla there and then saw at least a dozen more going between SFO and Palo Alto. So yeah.
Welcome back to the land of Teslas.
Thank you. Thank you. And then now I'm here with no internet, so we're doing this over LTE. So this is a new episode here.
The future,
wireless. Sort of, I guess. I don't know. I don't really know what's going on. Comcast is letting me down.
What are you drinking?
I am drinking a Statesman tonight. We've got some gin, some chartreuse, and I think some pear liqueur. It's very very tasty. And I've had to be a Statesman in spending a half hour on the phone with Comcast, so you know it's bringing out my diplomatic side. How about you?
I'm drinking a Hendrick's gin martini. So Hendrick's gin, Dolan vermouth, and two large olives.
Olives. Oh, interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yep. No pearl onions or twists for me. I like the olives.
Well, you know, putting a pearl onion would make it a Gibson. So yeah.
Darn it, Mike.
What would you like to talk about tonight?
I thought we could talk about the Gigafactory since we've talked a little bit about production in the past with the factories and sort of in the theme of continuing to unpack what's going to happen with Model 3. I think the Gigafactory is part and parcel with making sure Model 3 happens. So wanted to dig in a little bit to what the heck the Gigafactory is and what it means for Tesla.
Yeah. Giga what? Giga who?
Gigafactory. It's a fun name. Tesla obviously loves branding things and showmanship. So I think for what many companies would be a footnote to the fact that they need to produce batteries, Tesla has really branded this concept of the Gigafactory. And what's interesting is the Gigafactory is not for producing cars. It's for producing battery cells and battery packs.
That is interesting. Can you tell us a little bit more about what it is, where it is, and how it came to be?
Yeah, so the Gigafactory is currently located in outside of Reno, Nevada.
Currently located? It's not mobile, right?
No. Well, there's going to be more of them. So Gigafactory 1, but we'll just call it Gigafactory since there's only one. So de facto, the default. It's outside Reno, Nevada. And about 30 minutes outside Reno by car. And it's on a very empty parcel of land, many, many thousands of acres. And it is going to be a 13 million square foot facility. It will be the largest single building by square footage and second only in volume to a Boeing factory. So it's going to be one of the biggest buildings in the world. Anywhere, and it will be a factory used by Tesla to produce batteries for their cars and also their stationary storage of the Powerwall and power packs. And it is still in construction, so this is not fully operational yet. Only about 11 to 14% of it is actually done. It's so big, they're constructing it in phases, and there's already people working in it. There's like just under 100 Tesla employees already working in it, and they're producing battery the power walls and power packs.
Oh, so it is actually producing things right now.
Yeah, so what's interesting is that it's not just a Tesla joint, as it were. It's multiple vendors are going to be involved. So the origin of it really comes down to the simple fact that the amount of lithium-ion batteries produced in the world in 2013 combined from every manufacturer was only about enough to produce 100,000 Teslas. And so when Elon Musk and team looked at where they wanted to go in terms of car production, they realized that there would need to be a very large increase in the amount of production of batteries in the future for them to actually meet that demand. And rather than, you know, tell Panasonic and others, hey, we're going to need a lot more batteries. Trust us, make these multi-billion dollar investments. They realized no one was going to believe them, that they were going to 10x their volume of cars. And so they needed to take matters into their own hands and actually decide to build a factory themselves. And so they, in about 2013, started working on this project of the Gigafactory and worked with Panasonic, who's been their largest battery provider, to strike a deal to build what's now known as the Gigafactory and have it be the place where enough batteries would be produced to supply 500,000 vehicles in preparation for the Model 3. And so Panasonic is actually going to be a tenant of the Gigafactory. And it's a really interesting model where raw materials will come in on one end and finished battery packs ready to go inside Teslas will come out the other end.
So Panasonic is the one actually building the batteries just inside the Tesla facility?
That's right. The interesting thing about a Tesla battery is, unlike, you know, a AA battery or the battery in your iPhone, there's a lot more to an air quote battery in a Tesla than the cell. So if you think about like a AA battery, that's similar in size actually to the cells that are used inside of a Tesla. Those cells are made by Panasonic. They're not AA batteries. They're a specific battery cell. And those are lithium ion batteries. And those cells are then packaged together into packs by Tesla. So Panasonic will create the raw battery cells and then move those over a line, and then they will become property of Tesla. And then Tesla will take these thousands of individual cells and string them together into packs, and then into modules, and then into full battery packs. And so there's many different pieces that go into a battery pack inside of a Tesla. And so they're going to have other vendors as well who are going to supply other parts of the process so that they can basically do this way more efficiently than if these were happening in multiple factories across the globe, being shipped across the globe, and final assembly happening inside of you know, the Fremont factory. So should be really big economies of scale improvements.
So it's a matter of guaranteeing that this like sort of choke point in their manufacturing bill of goods or whatever you'd call it is that there's enough available, that there's enough capacity, and also driving down that price. How much does the battery make up in the cost to Tesla to produce a car?
Yeah, so the battery packs work out to, there are variable costs based on how big the battery pack is, but they are between $15,000 and $20,000 for battery packs right now for the S. And so to do a $35,000 car, you really need to get that down to below $15,000. And so they're really banking on decreases in the cost of the batteries for Model 3. It's not as if they're ready to produce batteries at a capacity and at a price that would be very profitable for them. So they've got this hat trick going on where they both need to improve the efficiency and the cost per cell and per pack of the batteries for the Model 3. They also need to be able to produce that many cars. So the more they can drive down that cost, the more cost-effective EVs can be. So just for a point of reference, the current price that Tesla has stated their battery packs cost is around $190 per kilowatt hour. And so a Model S is, you know, a 75 kilowatt hour pack or a 90 kilowatt hour pack. So you take that 75 and multiply it by the 190. It's sort of where they're at now. And with the Gigafactory, they hope to decrease that price by 30%. So they would be around $130 or so per kilowatt hour. And the really magic number is $100 per kilowatt hour. And that really gets you to the point where it would be comparable to an internal combustion engine car in terms of range and price compared to an engine and, traditional gasoline transmission system. So we're still a bit away from that, but the Gigafactory is a necessary step towards driving towards those lower prices.
Yeah, it's interesting that we've been focusing on the production capacity in Fremont here, where they're actually, you know, got all the robots assembling the cars, but it sounds like the production capacity of the Gigafactory is just as important to the meeting the Model 3 goals as the assembly plant here in California.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if the Gigafactory weren't happening, Model 3 most likely wouldn't be possible at the volumes they're describing, and especially since they've moved up the production targets, as we talked about in the last episode, from 2020 of 500,000 vehicles to 2018, it's even more imperative that they have this battery capacity improvements due to the Gigafactory, because spinning up a factory to produce this many battery packs is not a fast endeavor. I mean, it's going to be a multi-year endeavor, and they started 2 years ago. So if their orders really started trickling in now, they wouldn't have been able to get any supplier to move quick enough to produce enough batteries in time. So I think this was a smart move and a necessary move. And in watching some interviews with Elon Musk, he was saying that it's sort of the least bad option. Obviously, they would have preferred for some other supplier to have enough capacity to produce the batteries they needed at a cost that they found attractive. But no one really stepped up to the plate, so they had to do it themselves. And, you know, the Gigafactory is going to cost over $5 billion all in. And, you know, a large percentage of that will be coming from Panasonic, who will be is an official partner and is paying for a part of it. Tesla is paying for part of it. And then there's some tax breaks from Nevada. And then they'll be raising some money through bonds through the public markets to finance it as well. So, you know, Tesla's already unprofitable and they still have to invest more money and resource in the Gigafactory just to provide a resource that really should be a variable cost. I mean, they really should just be able to buy these packs on the open market. And that's sort of the ironic thing, is that these cells that make up the battery packs, the original intention from Tesla was that we're going to use these commodity cells, that these 18650s that are used in laptop batteries. Back in 2004, they sort of saw this trend of these battery packs, these lithium ions, being used in so many different places that they could piggyback off of the growth of lithium ion batteries and the decrease in cost. And here they are, a decade plus later, needing to build their own factories to produce them and building them with slightly different chemistries optimized for automotive versus consumer electronics. And so it's just a little bit funny how things have shifted, where they're so large now, they're a market maker, and they would consume all of the battery packs if they could, and they can't, so they need to make their own.
It sounds reminiscent of what we've heard about Apple for producing iPhones, where they've had to partner with, I mean, obviously Foxconn for assembly, but I remember reading about a partnership where they're building factories to produce the LCDs with, I think, Sharp it was.
Yeah.
And then their A9 or A8 or their CPUs are produced in conjunction with a couple of companies. And yeah, it seems like it's similar in that regard. Are there any other car companies that kind of deal with that much vertical integration, I guess?
Not in recent history. There's been a common trend towards more and more outsourcing. GM spun off their parts division, Delphi, many years ago, which then went bankrupt. And there's this massive supplier base for the automotive industry, where many car companies use the same parts bins and suppliers for airbags and windshields and switches, all the way down to the gauges in the vehicles are made by the same suppliers. And But one of the things that all of these companies have kept internal has been engine production. So most car companies will make their engines, design the vehicle, and then almost all the other parts are purchased off the shelf from another supplier. But if you look back, you know, about 100 years ago with Henry Ford, back in the 20s, obviously the war was happening, and getting supplies, raw materials to make cars was extremely difficult. And Henry Ford decided to build his own timber mills and the rubber for the tires, and just sort of went down this path of vertical integration. And it really served Ford well until Chevy came along and started introducing new models every year. And so this heavy vertical integration model really became problematic for Ford and became this really strong cost burden, and they couldn't deal with it, and it almost killed the company. And so, you know, not prognosticating on the future of Tesla based on Ford's forays into vertical integration, but it isn't something we've seen happen very much. And sort of the modern MBA wisdom is that you should stick to your core competency and not do much insourcing or vertical integration. And Tesla's bucking the trend, as well as SpaceX. SpaceX does much of their own internal production. And obviously that's important because Elon Musk runs that company as well. And they're in an industry of incumbents and very high costs. So yeah, I think it really is necessary. I mean, I looked at a lot of data and I couldn't find anyone refuting the claim that Tesla needed to do this from a supply side. There's definitely a lot of concerns as to whether or not it's going to strap the company with too much debt and be too difficult to manage. Because if they get the timing wrong, if the Gigafactory isn't ready in the next year and a half, then they won't be able to produce the volume cars they need to. So they've just really increased the difficulty, because any risk of the Gigafactory not being ready is now multiplied by the risk of the car not being ready, and the ongoing costs of running both is just so high. Like, they just, you know, multiplied the probability of failure by having two instead of just one factory.
Crazy. So you mentioned it's in Nevada, which seems to complicate things even further, given that their production plant is in the Bay Area here in California. So is it, like, why is it in Nevada? And does it have anything to do with the fact that Area 51 is also in Nevada?
I can't comment on the Area 51 connection. I'll have to leave that up to people to speculate. But
can't or won't?
No comment. The reason it's in Nevada ultimately came down to the package of incentives that Nevada gave Tesla. So I need to correct that. It's not just the incentives. It's the right of way that they cleared to building it quickly. So Tesla really came out in 2014 with the plan to do the Gigafactory, and they weren't sure where they were going to build it. They actually did a bake-off amongst a bunch of different states: Arizona, California, Nevada, New Mexico, and basically went to all those states and said, look, we want to build a factory. We think it's going to provide a lot of economic value. We're going to hire a lot of people there. What's your best offer? And we want both tax incentives, and we also want the right to build the factory very quickly, and we're going to need permits quickly, we're going to need environmental review quickly. And they winnowed it down, and California kind of dropped out sort of early. The environmental review was something that was going to be really difficult to get done quickly. Also, the cost of the land was much higher. And then it came down to Nevada and New Mexico. And what's funny is Tesla was so hell-bent on building and keeping the Gigafactory on schedule, they actually broke ground on multiple sites that they'd already secured, knowing that one of them was going to be thrown away, essentially, just to make sure they could stay on schedule. Because if they delayed and wouldn't be able to build, they wouldn't meet their schedule. So they went ahead, not knowing exactly where it was going to end up, building it in multiple places. And then Nevada came through with about a $1 billion-plus package over 10 years or 20 years. And but what's funny is Elon Musk was at a conference talking about it, and there's been a lot of hoopla around the tax incentives and whether or not it's bad for Nevada. And his point was ultimately that Nevada did a bunch of examination around what the economic benefit to the state is going to be. And over that 20-year period, they estimate it's going to be worth over $100 billion in value to the state. And he sort of had a fun quip that if anyone understands the house always wins, it's Nevada. So from Tesla's point of view, the incentives are pretty minor. You know, $100 million or $50 million a year in incentives is not that much for a large project like this, hiring thousands and thousands of Nevada residents and bringing a lot of attention to the state.
Yeah, so where do they calculate that value coming from? Is the Gigafactory more labor, like human labor intensive than the more roboticized assembly plant?
It will have thousands of employees, similar to the Tesla plant in Fremont,
which needs a name. It's hard to you're stumbling over referring it because it doesn't have a catchy name.
They need to come up with a good name for it. But they base that based on like how much tax would potentially come, but also how many more people will be there, how many suppliers will be there, how many restaurants will be there. I mean, I think they have some pretty good calculations. I didn't dig into all the details of how they calculate that $100 billion total economic benefit to the state. But I think it's pretty common for some of these large projects where the states do give some incentives. I mean, they've been doing this a lot with the data centers as well in the tech industry for Oregon and other states where they're all Washington, where companies basically do bake-offs to decide where they're going to build their next data center. You know, I think the tax incentives are pretty minor relative to the overall project, because, you know, $1 billion seems like a big number, but over 20 years, that's just not that much. And I think the more important piece was actually the clearance to build fast, because they want to have, by the end of this year, by the end of 2016, they want Panasonic to be producing cells. And so they're building, you know, there's a railway going behind the factory. So raw materials, lithium, cobalt, nickel, aluminum, steel are going to come in on train cars. They'll offload them, bring them into the factory. And then out the other end, they'll be loading packs that are going to go to Fremont on the rail cars. And then obviously the Fremont factory also has rail connection. And so they ship some of the cars by rail. So packs will come in by rail. So it really just sort of reduces the amount of distance that these molecules that are making up these batteries have to travel. Elon Musk was saying that some of the battery pack components are traveling around the world multiple times in the current supply chain. So reducing the amount of travel for any of these components, because, you know, taking a commodity piece, metal like a cobalt or nickel and transporting it around the world multiple times through the supply chain is an extremely inefficient process when the margins on batteries is, you know, somewhere around 3 or 4%. So every mile you can pull out of the supply chain for moving these heavy materials around is a really big deal. And so what's going to happen is these raw materials are going to come into the factory as raw metal, and they will produce the cells, they'll produce the casing that they go into, the electrolyte solution will be produced, they'll be assembled into these packs, and the plastic will be made on site to assemble the modules into packs. The cooling that happens in between the different cells to keep the battery temperature regulated, since batteries heat up when they're used, and that's not good for the efficiency of the battery and potentially dangerous. So Tesla in their pack design has cooling, and they'll just keep iterating on reducing both the total amount of stuff in the battery packs and the manufacturing efficiency of creating them, since, you know, there's multiple steps in making these packs. And so there's lots and lots of room for improvement in the efficiency and in the manufacturing process. So that 30% goal, they've continued to reiterate it for many years now. And so I don't think they would be saying that if they didn't think it was still reasonable.
When you start talking about all these elemental components.
Yeah.
I start wondering, like, so for a green car, a sustainable, Elon Musk likes to talk about it being a sustainable future. What is the environmental impact of actually producing all of the raw materials that go into these battery packs?
Yeah, so that piece is still not great. So the environmental impact is terrain-based. So there's the impact on the actual physical world by mining. So these items, these earth metals, need to be mined out of the ground. And so different countries have different regulations around the process and the sort of environmental impact that mines have.
And so, are these elements that are found like all over the place, and they can deal with whatever environmental regulation regime they want, or is it only located in certain parts of the world?
Yeah, so some of the items are like, I think the lithium is mostly down in Chile. China has a lot of cobalt and metals, nickel. But Tesla has said they are planning to source as much as possible from North America. And any cost increase in the raw material they expect would be offset by the reduced transfer costs. So obviously shipping a material overseas from China is expensive and relatively more expensive than getting the same material from Canada or from the middle of the country, Idaho, things like that, where there are mines. The U.S. is not installing as many cobalt mines and lithium mines as may be needed. And so some analysts are talking about and really digging into, well, how much lithium production is there? How much cobalt production is there? How much nickel? But when you get to that level of elemental commodity markets, they're not as constrained as they are on the battery packs and battery cells. So it looks like there will be new mines created over time to produce enough battery packs for the world to do electric vehicles. So there'll be some impact there. The machines that are running to actually extract it and their impact. But ultimately, the packs are extremely recyclable and very valuable. So the long-term detriments, like the amount of energy that a pack will be able to expel over its useful life is far greater than the number of miles that would be, you know, the amount of gasoline that would be burned to go the same number of miles. So it does have an environmental impact, but I think it's still yet to be seen what the total sort of cradle to cradle impact is going to be, cradle to grave impact will be for the, the raw earth, raw element extraction process.
Yeah, raw earth, but is there more corporate synergy on the horizon where there might be some asteroid mining with SpaceX, and they can just bring back if there are asteroids with these heavy metals in them, bring them back from off Earth?
It's funny actually that you mentioned that, because I was watching a recent Elon Musk video, and it was he was at MIT, and a student asked him, as they go to the moon and go to Mars, do they plan to do an exploration for materials and natural resources? And Elon Musk clearly has thought about this, because he said unequivocally no, that there's no benefit to mining these places and trying to bring the materials back, because it's just way too expensive to put those on a spaceship and fly them back on a rocket.
Currently.
Yeah. I mean, he said that even if you found cocaine perfectly packed on Mars, it would not make sense to bring it back to the U.S. So he said the Martians would be pretty happy. But and that's a quote. I mean, he literally used that example that crack cocaine is still not rich enough in its per kilogram price to warrant bringing it back. So no short-term likelihood.
Or is he just trying to get Jeff Bezos off the scent?
Yeah, or save all the cocaine for himself. He knows is on Mars.
Mountains of it.
Mountains of it. Yeah, so I guess I think that the Gigafactory is certainly an unprecedented in the modern era for a car company. It is special in that they don't really plan to sell these battery packs to other manufacturers. So as Chevy and Fiat and others and Volkswagen eventually start needing more battery packs, I'm sure they will continue to pressure other suppliers to create more battery packs. So there will certainly be more and more battery production in the world, but Tesla is setting themselves up to be their own supplier and control their destiny. And, even in the last earnings call we discussed, they're certainly trying to do that with their own parts in the Model 3, because they can't rely on suppliers to meet their aggressive Elon Musk style deadline. So it definitely makes sense. And I think it's a really interesting thing to watch. They plan to have it ready to go and producing cells by the end of this year. So the end of 2016, the beginning of 2017, it's really need to be humming to start making Model 3 happen. So we're going to get a report card very soon, and then Gigafactory 2 and 3 will probably be shortly on the horizon.
So Tesla has been pretty open about sharing their technology, their open patents, and trying to, I guess, again, build towards the sustainable energy future. Are they doing the same thing with the battery technology, or do they view that as more of a defensive thing for them?
I don't know if they've actually open sourced the battery stuff. I don't think there's as many I don't know if they have as many patents. That's something I'll check into. And what's been said, though, is that the unlike silicon and Moore's law with building chips, that unfortunately batteries are extremely difficult to advance. And some of the smartest people in the world have tried to make breakthroughs in batteries and have pretty much been unsuccessful in major breakthroughs. And that unfortunately battery technology moves forward at about 6 to 8% a year in terms of either energy density or cost. And so as a result, it never really looks like any one year that batteries are that much better, but in the long arc of time, batteries continue to improve. And so Tesla is not really pushing or advocating that they're going to come up with some new crazy battery technology and chemistry at the fundamental level, but that what they think the biggest opportunities are that they can control are these efficiency and manufacturing improvements. And that will be the biggest way for them to make a quick jump in the quality and cost of the batteries going forward.
Excellent. Well, that really answers a lot of my questions about the Gigafactory. I feel like I need to say that in air quotes or something. I don't know. Did you have anything else you wanna touch on, or do you want to wrap this up?
No, I think that's good. I'm excited to hear if anyone has any more feedback for us on other episodes or this episode. And we're really excited at the number of listeners. It's just been really thrilling to see all the comments. And so to that point, if you have any feedback for us, you can leave us a message on the Reddit page, subreddit we have of r/TheTeslaShow, as well as tweet at us at The Tesla Show on Twitter. And please subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play or your podcasting app of choice so you get these delivered as they're released. But other than that, I think we're good.
Excellent. All right. Well, I think that was a pretty good introduction to Gigafactories, I guess, or the first of many.
We'll have to do another one when Gigafactory 2 comes out.
Excellent. All right. I'll talk to you later.
All right. Talk to you later, Mike.